Actor and musician Jeff Daniels is a busy man, but not too busy to come back to entertain folks in his home state of Michigan. Daniels is doing a one-man stage show in 7 Michigan towns starting today in Traverse City. Now, WKAR's Melissa Benmark spoke with Jeff Daniels this week. Melissa, remind us how many projects Jeff Daniels has going on.
Well, these are just the ones that I know of. Last fall, he got an Emmy for his performance on HBO's The Newsroom. That just got renewed for one more season. And not long ago, he wrapped up filming the sequel to the movie Dumb and Dumber with Jim Carrey. When I talked to Daniels this week, I asked him what it was like to get back into the Dumb and Dumber frame of mind after 20 years.
Well, you're assuming there's a mind to get into. It was to go from Will McAvoy, you know, on The Newsroom, to Harry Dunn on Dumb and Dumber 2 was, you know, I've called it kind of an intellectual freefall. What was frightening was how easy it came back. Jim and I both were kind of going, well, that was easy. And I don't know if it says something about us, but it was fun to do, and it's to be that mindless and that oblivious is, there's something liberating about that.
You got to think that being around Jim Carrey, if nothing else, is going to bring out your inner child, as opposed to this, you know, the Sorkin writing being so dense.
Well, being around Jim, you just smile. He's just one of these people that, I mean, you know, he's a comedic genius. He really is. I mean, he's one of a kind. And to get next to that, you just can't help but smile and you know, dive in. You know, we call it just grabbing hands and jumping off the cliff and hoping, you know, the flapping of our forearms will keep us from, you know, going Wile E. Coyote face down on the canyon floor. And it's a wonderful comedic challenge to kind of jump into the craziness that is not only Jim, but Harry and Lloyd and the Farrelly brothers.
Right.
And you know, try to pull it off. To go from Sorkin's high-speed, you know, dialogue and intelligence. These are smart people saying smart things on their mind, out of their mouth, is how we approach Newsroom. And then to go to Dumb and Dumber, where there's nothing on their mind whatsoever.
It must potentially be an interesting contrast, though, between where both of you guys were in your careers 20 years ago and where you are now. I mean, frankly, we see much more of you now than we see of Jim Carrey.
Well, I took the scenic route. The long, winding, scenic route, where Jim, you know, when we were shooting Dumb and Dumber, the first one, he had Ace Ventura had been out, but Mask was about to come out. So literally, in the middle of Dumb and Dumber 1, Jim got Batman. And so he was, you know, a rocket heading to the stratosphere. And by the time Dumb and Dumber opened, he was Jim Carrey in capital letters. So he was off and running, and you know, when you get that, whether it'd been him or me, doesn't matter. You jump on that train and you ride it. But yeah, I've got an off-Broadway streak in me where I do the indie world, and I just went for strong writing, and sometimes that isn't what ends up at studios, and so now you're in the indie world, and then eventually, you know, did a couple of movies here in Michigan, and was just writing plays for the Purple Rose, and I'm very happy doing that. And then when Sorkin came along, you know, years later, it was kind of this, you know, suddenly I'm, you know, not dead. Suddenly I'm, you know, still in the business to some people. So it's just kind of been an in-the-shadows kind of career, doing a whole bunch of things. And then now Newsroom helps, and certainly Dumb and Dumber 2 is going to, you know, make it difficult to go through airports again.
One of the striking things about the list of your credits is the contrast between the characters that you play. And when you're kicking around an offer, what do you think has to appeal to you for you to say, yeah, this is the next thing I want to do? Is there a common thread or really not?
I think that the thing that is a high priority is it unpredictable? Is what the character does unpredictable? Do you get ahead of it? Is the character just a plot device to move the story along for the 28-year-old actor who's making $10 million? You know, and if that's the case, then you pass. And you get a lot of those. But is the story unpredictable? Does it surprise? Do the smart people out there who think they know everything, do we surprise them? Do we, you know, can we stop the story on page 50 and go, tell us what happens next? And if 9 out of 10 times, either me or, what you consider the smart people out there will be wrong. Great, that's a good story. That means, and is it plausible? All of those, it's kind of, that's hard to do. That's why people complain about writing so much, is because in Hollywood it gets so formulaic that, you know, you're ahead of it.
So unpredictability is a plus.
Because you've done it. You know, I'm entering my fifth decade almost of doing this, and you get bored.
And the stage show that you're taking around Michigan and elsewhere is, it sounds like, something completely different from Newsroom and Dumb and Dumber. And what's that about?
That's something I've been doing for, I've been playing guitar since the 70s, and really not publicly until about 2001. Where at the Purple Rose Theater Company in Chelsea, we always need to raise money. And in 2001, over the Christmas, New Year's holidays, we said, what can we do to raise money? We're dark, we're between shows, people are in town, they're around. And we said, wait a minute, you play guitar? Well, yeah, on my back porch. Why don't you go out and play some of your songs? We'll charge money. So I did it, and, you know, after a couple of holiday seasons of doing it, and got over the flop sweat.
Really?
Oh, my God, yeah. You're naked. And I wasn't prepared for that, to go out there. And it's stuff you've written. You've been playing for 20 years, some of them. But there's no band. It's just me. And the stories and the patter and the jokes you have to find. And then you sing these songs, some of which are, like, you know, a little personal. And you realize that, and what I came to understand was there was no character. You walk out in a movie, a play, or whatever, and you there's a character, so there's a filter. So you can go there emotionally, but it's always with this mask of the character with a different name. Well, now the name is me, and it's a song I wrote, and here it is, and there's no filter. So that took some time to understand how to do it.
Well, one common criticism I've heard of actors is that sometimes people will say, well, he always plays himself. And so what's nice about this arrangement, I suppose, is that you get to play widely divergent people in your acting career, and you actually get to play yourself for these shows because, as you said, it's your material.
Yeah, and it's also me in a spotlight, me in a great mood, me glad to be here, turn on the lights, you know, I'm going to hold you for 90 minutes or whatever it is, and it's not going to feel like 90 minutes. You're going to laugh harder than you have in a long time, and then drop in the ones that are going to make you feel something. And there's an art to that. You know, the guys like, well, good God, Arlo Guthrie, Stevie Goodman, John Prine, Lyle Lovett, John Hyatt, Christine Lavin, Cheryl Wheeler, on and on and on. These people, Guy Clark, Utah Phillips, these people have been doing it for decades. And there's an art to that. And it's not just going out there and winging it. And I enjoy the challenge, the creative challenge of that, and making sure that I take them for a ride without having, you know, a 16-person band and 12 dancing girls.
That's so cool that you mentioned Utah Phillips in there.
Oh, my God. Jim Fleming's my agent, my music agent, and Utah Phillips was playing the Ark in Ann Arbor, and I'd never seen him, heard of him. You know, I knew Ani DeFranco and Utah had made a thing, CDs together and stuff. I was aware of him. Jim says, you got to see him. I said, well, okay. And went and saw him. His first song was 20 minutes long. And he kept stopping it.
Yep.
And going off and off and this and that side street and that thing and all. And then finally it ended. And at the break, I told Fleming, I said, that's the best piece of improv I've ever seen. He goes, no, it's all written. It's scripted. He knows exactly what he's saying, every word. And he made it look so spontaneous. Another great guy who does this, local, or a Michigan guy anyway, is Joel Mabus.
Oh, yeah.
Just, what a player. And a great songwriter, and another guy that can walk out there with just a guitar and hold an audience. I love that about him.
What influenced your decision to go to parts of Michigan that don't usually get big-name people? I thought that was so cool. Bay City, Fremont, you know. Why did you go to some of the smaller places?
Kathleen, my wife and I, we went on a little 10,000-mile, 50-city gig tour two or three falls ago. Played all kinds of places, you know, like Ellsworth, Maine, and, you know, on and on and on. And time and time again, people will go, thanks for coming. Thanks for coming to Ellsworth. Thanks for coming to Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Thanks for coming to Duluth. thanks for coming to Fargo.
Right.
And Alaska, we went to Alaska, and people said, thanks for coming all this way. We had a great time. So the audiences are kind of halfway there for you. You know, it's you're the thing that to do it in, whether it's Fremont or Traverse City or wherever it might be, Bay City, you're the thing to do that weekend. Where you go into the New Yorks and the Chicagos, and good God, you're hoping to get 100 people because there's so much else to do besides watch an actor sing.
One of the things that comes up in almost everything that's written about you is how you've chosen to live as much as you can in Michigan. What do you think are the fundamental philosophical differences between Michigan life and big city life? I don't mean, you know, the obvious physical things like, you know, rent, how much it costs, and traffic. I mean, what do you think is the intangible part of living in Michigan versus someplace bigger?
I think the biggest one, I've written a song called about being on the red carpet at all these awards shows. And you really have to play the role of, are you as excited about me as I am? That's the name of the song. And there is this kind of self, you know, the importance of self, your importance to the world that exists, certainly in Hollywood. And it's part of the deal. It's part of the, you have to sell yourself and be about yourself. And we're in the Midwest, we don't think too highly of the people who trumpet themselves and sell themselves. And it's kind of do your job and move on. Do it as well as you can. But nothing's given to you here. And I think sometimes in Hollywood in particular, you can get things without having done very much. You can find success without having really earned it. And that's death. I mean, that, you learn that in Star School, the fictitious Star School. The worst thing to do is become a star and you're not good enough. And I tell young actors all the time, I said, don't buy it. Don't buy the you're as good as everyone says you are. You need to outwork everybody on the movie or on the TV show or in the play. You need to outwork everybody else. When you do that, then maybe you've earned what some people say about you. And that's why I kind of really like the people that have longevity. I was just at the SAG Awards, and it was great to talk to Meryl, to Tom Hanks, Jeremy Irons, you know, Ronnie Howard, people like that, people who've been doing it for decades, like the Utah Phillips in music. I love those people. It's tough to last for decades in show business, and I admire people like that.
That was actor and musician Jeff Daniels, who's currently on tour in Michigan. For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.